AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Well, perhaps I wasn't making myself clear about the rhubarb thing. I know everybody's been watching this very closely, and we do have emergence. But that doesn't mean winter is done with us just yet. Here in the nation's majestic and volatile midsection. Live from inside the snow globe via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's a machine repeat, the extended remix. First, we'll talk with Kevin Wendt from the Wendt Group. Then it's Casey Seymour, host of the Moving Iron podcast and location manager for 21st Century Equipment. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAMWX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip, the Iron Man, Greg Peterson. Good morning. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, Davis. How are you doing, buddy?
Super great. Really appreciate you taking the time to give us an extended remix of the stuff that you are obsessed with. Your entire world revolves around the world of iron, of the movement of machinery, and these sorts of things. So I'm really looking forward to having a look into to what's interesting to you this morning.
Well, yes, thank you for correctly identifying that I've lived an obsessive life these last 31 plus years tracking used farm machinery. And heck yeah, it's fun to always fun to talk equipment and hop on with you guys and fill in for our good buddy Chip. So it should be really good.
Yeah, and usually we have we've got you on for just the one segment on Mondays, and so I think maybe what we should do is kind of take that segment, you know, let you kind of run. We'll open the chute for the first two segments with you and your guests. You can talk with them about whatever you want to. But then in that segment four, we're going to get to the pick of the week. I see you've got another record auction price on a tractor Saturday, and just some machinery auctions coming up this week. How do you feel about that idea? Oh, for heaven's sakes, we may have lost Greg. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
it looks like we
that's
did.
All right.
He'll be back.
I know he feels fantastic about it. He'll be back in just a little bit. But this gives me an opportunity to run down the news, and then we'll get to Michael Clark here in just a moment. In this morning's news, the House and Senate are both in session this week, with the focus turning to the next major big topic, which is an infrastructure package, which is expected to eventually include some climate change and tax-related provisions. The price tag is expected to easily exceed the $1.9 trillion COVID aid stimulus package, but the effort will take longer to finalize and faces several congressional hurdles. The goal is to have both chambers pass their bills by the start of the August recess, with an eye toward finishing conference negotiations before the current authorization expires on September 30. Now, while President Biden has been silent regarding annual wealth taxes advanced by some Democrats, he instead has proposed several tax increases on corporations and high-income households. For the Biden administration, the coming changes are an opportunity not just to fund key initiatives like infrastructure, climate, and expanded help for poorer Americans, but also to address what Democrats argue are inequities in the tax system itself. Democratic strategists see the next package as the last chance to reshape the U.S. economy on a major scale before lawmakers turn to the 2022 midterm campaign. And that's an upcoming wild card, that midterm elections. Because, of course, if that sort of upsets the balance between the House and the Senate, which could make things a bit more complicated for the Biden administration to move forward, it could be a different ballgame. So, like I said, these Democratic strategists are really going to be focusing on getting some of their key issues addressed before we hit those midterm elections. The migrant surge at the southern border has caught the attention of lawmakers from both sides of the political aisle. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, will help shelter and transfer a record number of child migrants showing up at the U.S.-Mexico border, the Homeland Security Secretary said yesterday. FEMA will find and expand suitable facilities for the children and adults and accompanied children will continue to be returned to Mexico. And Speaker Pelosi was dragging President Trump into this too. She was highly critical, basically saying this whole thing is Trump's fault. So we'll have to watch how this story unfolds. And hey, attention, everyone. Attention, everyone. Today is the deadline to complete election and enrollment for 2021 ARC and PLC programs. Producers who have not yet elected and enrolled in the Ag Risk Coverage or Price Loss Coverage programs for 2021 have until today. Now, if you have not signed a contract or want to make an election change, you've got to contact your local USDA service center to make an appointment. Once again, if you've not signed a contract or want to make an election change, get in touch with your local USDA service center. Make an appointment. Today's the day. U.S. and Chinese officials will meet Thursday in Alaska. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and President Joe Biden's National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan will meet with China's most senior foreign policy official Yang Jiechi and Foreign Minister Wang Yi in Anchorage. Meanwhile, the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission on Friday will present its annual report to Congress on the national security implications of the economic relationship between the U.S. and China. Conspicuous that that Blinken and Sullivan are meeting with Chinese officials on Thursday, but yet the Economic Security Review Commission comes with its findings the following day. The timing seems significant there. And finally, Dr. Anthony Fauci says the CDC is aware of accumulating data that suggests 3 feet of social distance, quote, are okay under certain circumstances. Meanwhile, Fauci warned state leaders against the risky business of eliminating public health measures, raising concerns on Sunday's Meet the Press that the nation could see a new surge in cases if it lets its guard down. While Fauci did celebrate the decline in cases, he warned that a surge is still possible thanks to newer variants of the virus. So we'll keep an eye on that. Meanwhile, let's get to Michael Clark from BAMWX. Good morning, Michael. How are you, sir?
Doing good. How are you?
Really, really great. You know, just 2 days ago, I was out in my yard in a short sleeve T-shirt. I'm raking leaves. I'm thinking, man, we're really getting somewhere. And now all of a sudden, I mean, we got, I don't know what it is, 4 or 5 inches of snow, maybe six. We got some.
Yeah.
Is this going to be the last one? Is this it?
There could be one more possibly. I mean, there's one more system that might work in here late week, but a lot of people have gotten, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7 inches of snow from Iowa to South Dakota this morning. And then you've gotten, you know, widespread 3, 4, 5 inch rain reports across Nebraska. So this is a big storm system. This is affecting many people.
Well, and of course, this time of year, we get a snow like this, and, you know, an old Iowa boy tells himself, well, it'll melt quickly. But then I also had a dream last night of horrible flooding in my neighborhood. What are soil temperatures like? I mean, is this going to run off? Is it going to soak in? Does it do us any good soil moisture-wise?
I think it's a little bit of both. They're decent, you know, and there is some warming. I mean, the week two outlook is much warmer. It is going to warm back up. We have one more upper low pressure system that we will have to deal with later this week, and it will bring more rain and snow to the Midwest and especially to Iowa. Iowa, I think, could get more accumulating snow out of this, but week two looks warmer, and it looks a little bit more, quote unquote, normal spring-like weather, if you will.
Just super quick here, we're running out of time, but do you expect a fairly normal planting season weather?
I think overall, once we get out of the way here of this rainy, colder pattern, I do think overall, I'm not expecting major issues for now.
Outstanding. Michael Clark, BAMWX, thanks for your time this morning, pal. I appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy. Have a good day.
All right, man. Okay, so we are underway. Thank you for tuning into AgriTalk. It's Monday morning, everybody, and we are raring to go with Machinery Pete, the extended remix. He'll be up next with Kevin Wendt from the Wendt Group. Stick around for more AgriTalk.
As we move toward planting, growers will need to apply what they learned from last year to start the 2021 growing season successfully. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, joins me to chat about key considerations growers should have as they focus on next year. So, we know every season has its challenges. What are some of the key principles about weed management in corn that stand true no matter what Mother Nature throws our way?
growers can use three guiding principles in developing their weed management program in almost any environment. And these include using full use rates. Pre-emergent herbicides are necessary, even in seasons with later planting. You really want to make sure you can get a pre-emergent herbicide down. And then two-pass applications really help in controlling those tough weeds and also fighting herbicide resistance. It really gives you an opportunity to put overlapping residuals with different sites of action down.
Okay, so the overlapping residuals, that seems like one of the things that growers should be thinking about as they evaluate how they're going to attack weeds in 2021, right?
Yeah, the biggest overarching theme is that you need to use the information you have to inform decisions. That starts with scouting your fields all season to identify the weeds you see, maintain records of those weeds and the herbicides you've used to determine what's working and what's not. And lastly, make sure you prevent the late season weeds from going to seed by applying a full burn down, mowing or hand pulling any weeds you find. You really don't want those weeds going to seed. It's going to create problems down the road.
Exactly. Steve, what's the corn herbicide solution that you recommend for that early season weed control?
Only Acuron herbicide unlocks corn's full yield potential. It contains four active ingredients, including the unique component bicyclopyrone, and three effective sites of action. You have groups 5, 15, and 27. This helps Acuron outperform and outyield competitors by providing built-in burn down, greater consistency, powerful weed control, and longest lasting residual. And the impact of that early season weed control cannot be understated. Acuron can deliver 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergent at a full use rate.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, Steve, to find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. A little Rammstein there for the good professor himself. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you taking the time to spend it with us here. Chip is out this week. Apparently the groundhog has smiled on his plans to do a little bit of ice fishing up in the great state of Wisconsin, so we wish him the best. I hope he brought his safety pants. This morning, we have the privilege of speaking with Machinery Pete for the entire hour. Greg Peterson, thanks for taking the wheel here for us. I'm going to let you take it away from here, brother.
Hey, thanks, Davis. Really excited, folks, to welcome in our guest, Kevin Wendt, owner and CEO of the Wendt Group, a fantastic auction company in Ohio. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Hey, doing great, Machinery Pete. Glad to be on AgriTalk with you, and nice to have a little bit more of a little more sunshine in the Midwest.
Oh, well, the sun is shining in Plain City, Ohio, but Kevin, I tell you, it's snowing cats and dogs here in Minnesota. Can I make my way out to Ohio, get some of that sunshine?
You sure can. You can get a direct flight to Cincinnati or Columbus, Greg, and we'd love to have you.
Well, Kevin, before we start talking machinery and trends here, we have to help our friends out in radio listening land fill out their NCA brackets. And I don't know if I know a bigger Ohio State fan aficionado than you, Kevin. So now your Buckeyes, I see a number two seed, almost won the Big Ten tournament. But I think that might be a good sign. They lost in overtime in the finals. Now they might make a run. What's your take?
Yeah, I feel a lot better, Greg, this week than I did a couple weeks ago. We kind of went on a four-game slide toward the end of the Big Ten season and kind of righted the ship there, beating your Golden Gophers to start the Big Ten tournament, and then just came up short against Illinois. So hopefully we can. I think we got a pretty good draw to maybe make it at least to the second weekend for sure, and hopefully maybe a Final Four.
Well, folks, I've always found it helpful to follow Kevin's advice and suggestions. So when you're filling out that bracket, make those Buckeyes have a good run there. You guys have been to the Final Four 11 times. Maybe this will be number 12, Kevin. We'll be rooting for you. Now, got to ask you, I mean, we just passed the one-year mark of kind of the beginning of the shutdown with the pandemic here. What has the past 12 months been like in the auction business? I mean, it's got to be something.
Yeah, Greg, it's been really kind of unbelievable when you think about it. We're just coming up on a year. We actually had a couple live auctions that were scheduled in March when we hit our shutdown. And when that happened in our state, we converted them to online only. And of course, fortunately for my company, we already have a platform that right. we sell our livestock and cattle and pig equipment on. And so it was an easy transition for us to do that, to bring our folks over. And then it's just actually been odd, Greg. Like to me, it doesn't even feel like March Madness. It's like we've been cooped up for so long and we've been had so many rules and regulations and things we're supposed to do. It's like you don't even know what month it is sometimes.
Right.
On the equipment side, we've been able to embrace selling online, and our buyers have been able to do that. And not only from a standpoint of the convenience of that, but I think also the people that are concerned about the pandemic and COVID and social distancing and so forth have been able to bid online and go right along with the equipment. And it actually has helped our business become a little broader than what maybe we had anticipated.
Yeah, it's interesting comments there, Kevin. And folks, if you haven't checked out Kevin's website, it's thewentgroup.com. Fantastic auction website. I suggest you go check it out. And Kevin, I find an interesting point there. You mentioned your experience selling online. Now, I don't know if folks know this, but your website, showpig.com, I mean, you guys go back, I think, 17 years selling online livestock, and you've been kind of cutting edge on the front edge of the wave here. That must have, like you say, positioned you guys well to make this transition for machinery online the last year.
Yeah, it really did. Our staff, it was nothing new to our staff. Most of them were already working at home anyhow, so that, we're not really a bricks and mortar kind of a staff anyhow, except for a couple folks in accounting. And so that part was easy for them. And then Nathan, who you've met, that helps us with our live auctions with the online bidding platform there, he's great at taking pictures and writing descriptions. And so that transition was real easy for us as well. It was just a matter of getting our buyers in tune and understanding the difference between our platform and some of the others. We do a racehorse style closing, so the ending is a little bit different. But we've gotten them kind of used to that, and they like the fact that we don't have to charge a buyer's premium. So they were in favor of that as well.
Yeah, huge factor there. I know farmers love that aspect. So kudos to you guys for doing that, Kevin. And do you think from the bidder angle, I mean, we've had online bidding now for what, 15 years or something. But so this last year when more machinery auctions went strictly online, online only, I've been watching even before commodity prices shot up. It looked to me like used values were inching up. Is there something about just being home, clicking the button? How do you describe what we've seen here the last year?
I think so, because I think it does allow that bidder the convenience of whether they're at home or they're in their office. I know one of the things that we did, typically our livestock auctions, we close them in the evening. So we'll start to close them at
right.
7 or 8 o'clock Eastern time. It fits our group of buyers better. But with the machinery, we felt we needed to move that up more into the afternoon. So we usually start closing them around 2 o'clock or so. And so, people that go to a live equipment auction, they're more used to that morning kind of thing anyhow. So we found right. that tends to work a little better, for that clientele. But I do think as more companies have introduced the platforms and people feel confident in bidding, that security that, there's reputable companies out here doing it now that, I think it's an easy transition, and they don't maybe feel the pressure sometimes that they feel at a live auction, especially when we're selling choice. Sometimes there's a lot of pressure there with okay, did I make the right decision? Right. And the other thing I think, Greg, is the convenience factor. You know, even with some of the big farmers, I mean, they're busy people. And we have some folks, they'll come to the inspections and then they will actually, you know, bid on their iPad or their phone or whatever. And then in some cases, they'll even drive back to the auction site if they're not far away, hand us a check and take their item home. But they can do more work and not necessarily have to stand in the crowd. But I, like you, we grew up in that traditional live auction sitting. You know, there's nothing better than that. And I don't ever see that going away, but I think this is another way to add in people that are just busy and active and doing a lot of things for them to be able to bid and engage with our auctions and our sellers.
Right. Well, Kevin, I got to tell you, you had a sale February 19th, the farm auction, I think it was for Walker Farms in Circleville, Ohio. And I would just say it was fun to get video of that sale, to hear you calling a sale and your crew out at a sale. And I've been getting feedback from people the last couple of weeks here as we've started to open up, just the fun of going back to the auction. And that sale in Circleville was just incredible, you know, really strong prices. Can you speak to how people are feeling being able to get back out to the auction?
Oh, yeah, very much so. It's one of the few things, Greg, that they've been able to do in a public setting, and just to be able to socialize a little bit, you know, to see your neighboring farmer, just to see people, to talk about prices and see where things are headed. And so, you know, we've been so locked down with social events that it was, you know, like one of the few things they could participate in. And that particular auction, we were wide open enough in the area that we could spread people out and still be safe from a social distancing standpoint with the health department regulations and, you know, doing all the protocols that everyone else is doing with auctions. So that part was good. But just seeing people out and farmers, you know, back out trying to do something that was normal, kind of felt good. And you could see that reflected in the bidding too, because I mean, they jumped on early and often on everything the entire day.
Right. Yeah. As we wrap up here, Kevin, I just want to do a little shout out to folks looking for machinery. I know you've got a big 2-day online auction tomorrow and Wednesday, thewentgroup.com. I think approaching 300 items, and I love how you have it broken down. A lot of farmers with their lines selling equipment. So is that right? Do you have about 300 items on the sale, Kevin?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We got a little concerned about having that many on a 1-day auction, so we switched it to 2, and we're looking forward to the excitement there. It's basically an online format where they can bid online and pick their equipment up after they buy it.
Well, thanks, Kevin. And again, check it out, folks, thewentgroup.com.
That's right. That's Greg Peterson with his guest, Kevin Wendt. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk right after these words. Don't go away.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. Brian, some pressure across the soy complex earlier this morning, but it looks like nearbys are kind of starting to kind of push to the upside.
Well, we've seen the soybean market push higher. We've seen soy meal push higher, and soy oil is lower. So that's a reverse of the recent price action in the soy products, where we've seen the meal market really take a hit and soy oil push to the upside aggressively. So some spread unwinding there. The really big move is in the corn market this morning. And we had very strong weekly export inspections, almost a record, in fact. And that's really got the bull spreads running aggressively. May contract is up 10, 11 cents here. July isn't far behind and really sprinting to the upside on that news. Now, you know, big number, almost a record, like I mentioned. China took less than one-fifth of that, and China still has a lot of outstanding sales on the books. So we anticipate that corn shipments to China will ramp up as we move through spring and into the summer.
Live cattle futures. Last week we saw more cash action around 114, but we're higher this morning. Futures see an uptick in cash, maybe?
Well, possibly. I think the winter storm has something to do with that, dumping multiple feet of snow in some of the locations across the plains, so stress the livestock, and they're building weather premium back into the marketplace at this point in time. Interestingly enough, we're seeing the deferred contracts lead over the front end of that market, so that's somewhat telling, I suppose, and we're facing profit taking in the hog market so far this morning.
Yep, hog market's under some pressure this morning. That's Brian Grady from Pro Farmer on AgriTalk.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk this morning, everyone. Your pal, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk in Chip's stead. And we've got machinery Pete Greg Peterson here with some guests talking over what they're seeing in their industry. And we'll have more with Greg, including the pick of the week, in the fourth segment. But first, Greg, bring in your second guest for us, would you?
Yeah, you bet, Davis. Really excited to have a guy, Jonas, I've known for a long time, and actually, folks, one of the sharpest guys in the farm equipment world that I've run across, Casey Seymour, host of the Moving Iron podcast with 14 years of experience in the equipment biz. Casey, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, you bet. Now, Casey, I have a hard time keeping track of you. Are you actually in Wyoming these days, or are you still in Nebraska?
No, I'm still in Nebraska here. It's around Scotts Bluff.
Gotcha. Okay, Western Nebraska. So, Casey, first off, tell us a little bit about Moving Iron Podcast for folks that haven't run across your great show out there.
Yeah, it's a Moving Iron Podcast, something I do with a friend of mine named Aaron Fennell. And we basically just talk about the economic drivers behind the equipment business and what we see happening, what's going on in the auction market, what's happening from a dealer's perspective, and what we see as far as how technology is impacting what we see happening. And this last time we did, we talked quite a bit about the generational change that we see coming with farmers out there and how that's going to affect the used equipment business.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic there, Casey. I mean, young people grew up with a cell phone in their hand and the internet, you know, how they interact with farm equipment dealers shopping for used equipment versus, their fathers and grandfathers. That's a pretty rich topic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big topic too. And then just how the number of farmers that are going to retire over the next few years, and what does that look like? And then how does that impact the used equipment marketplace as well?
Right. Well, Casey, if I threw you a softball here, a little fastball down the pipe, just get your take on what we're seeing in the used farm equipment market right now here as 2020 has flipped into 2021. How would you describe the market right now?
It's really hot right now. I mean, if you look and see what's going on, used tractors are something that you can't hardly keep in stock right now. Really, anything that's late model, low hour is very sought after. Mm-hmm. It's been the last 7 years kind of in a down cycle here. And as you take a look at guys wanting to upgrade what they have, there's not the new equipment's not out there for guys to get. So that late model low hour stuff is really hot right now. So,
right.
And like you've talked about it a million times when you look at auction values too. I mean, I kind of call that the canary in the coal mine, and what you see selling at auction right now, when it comes to that late model low hour stuff is very equivalent to what we see selling at the dealership.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned, touched on it there, Casey, the availability factor. I've been doing this 31 years. I've only seen it like this twice. I think to me, late 07 and early 08, when, farmer demand for equipment, new and used, took off, and it was difficult to get. Is that something you're seeing out at the dealership level right now as well?
Yeah, we're seeing the same thing. Factories are ramping back up, and I pretty much can say by 22 that it'll be back to somewhat of a normal availability that you see. But I mean, a lot of stuff with COVID too is what's just
right.
Supply chains and those kind of things have gotten really screwed up here over the last 6 months, and we're starting to see some of that break loose, and we're starting to see more availability towards the latter half of 21, but Right now, it's stuff's out there a ways.
Okay. Now, Casey, I know you have paid particularly close attention, going back, I think, as far as 6+ years, to the volume of used equipment, items on dealer lots across the country. Can you speak to what you've seen with ups and downs there over the last few years and how we're sitting right now here in early 21?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of the high water mark for used equipment as a whole, especially combines, was probably 2016 was kind of the high water mark, and it's kind of slowly kind of trickled its way down. But as you take a look at what's going out on dealership lots right now, everyone's kind of in a spot where they're pretty well healed up as far as aged inventory goes, working through those kind of things. But the last 5 years, we've saw a lot of stuff get shipped off to auctions and those kind of things, and kind of the bloodletting that we saw happen there. But I think if you take a look at what's going on right now, most guys are in a pretty good spot, and the conversations I'm having with folks, everyone's looking for something. So that tells me that there's plenty of space on their lot for good used equipment.
Right. Now, Casey, let's turn this a little bit and let's talk future, because I know you always look at data and try to correlate going forward. I guess one thing I'm interested in and be curious to get your take now from the dealer level, coming out of the situation that the dealers came out of in, late 13, 14, 15, 16, having a struggle, the bloodletting you talked about, having so much late model used inventory. As things ramp up now and farmers are in buy mode and they're upgrading their lines, which they need to do, do you think collectively the farm equipment dealers will try to hold a little tighter with an eye towards what happened last time? Or do you think the money's flowing and it's just inevitable we'll get in that same situation again?
What's that saying? When it's sunny out, make hay, or make hay while the sun shines, or whatever that is. I mean, that's kind of like the mentality that we're going to see. I mean, we're going to have guys that are going to go out and we're going to do what they need to do to make sure things get in place. Now, I think coming out of this, since we had the 7-year run, we're going to see some different processes that were put in place and different, maybe a different view on what's happening there. But I think more guys are going to be in a better situation than they were 5 or 6 years ago. The size of dealerships has gotten bigger, so there's going to be a little more room to do some different stuff than what we've seen in the past. But I mean, I think the big thing we talk about the future is just, what does that look like? Who's that used buyer? And what does that look like moving in the next 5 years? What does that look like? And, I think if you look at how things are kind of transpiring, and, this is a good 2 or 3 year run that we're going to see. A lot of guys are going to get back to equity that they lost. I think they're going to look at retirement. What does that look like? And, as they go out of the marketplace and other operations get bigger, you're gobbling up used equipment buyers. So what does that look like and how does that work? And I think that's the biggest thing that I worry about more than anything, Greg, is just what does that long-term used equipment buyer look like? And I think for me, we're going to have to start looking at some international outlets for some of these countries that are starting to change and kind of roll over their agricultural practices more into more modern style farming, and which requires more modern style farm equipment.
Right. Well, folks, this is why I suggest you check out the Moving Iron podcast that Casey hosts, because this is the kind of discussion. If you're into farm equipment and trends, my friend Casey here lives and breathes this stuff. So check it out, folks, Moving Iron podcast. Now, Casey, I know recently you wrote a blog that I really enjoyed. It was, I think, maybe back end of December, looking specifically at 2012, maybe up through 14 model combines, with trends and what's going to, could be coming down the pike. Can you comment on that? Some of these combines approaching 10 years old, what you're seeing trend line?
Yeah. So when I look at used combines right now, especially those 2012, 13, 14 model machines, and it really doesn't matter what it is, if it's a combine or a tractor or whatever it was, the thing that happened there was typically during that time frame, we saw everyone, you know, every year they would trade, get new equipment, or every 2 years or 3 years or something like that. And really from 2012 to about 2017 or 18, no one really did anything. So a lot of these machines were coming into the marketplace that were relatively the same number of hours, relatively same age, relatively same condition. And we're starting to see this choke point of sorts in that 12 to 14 model equipment. And, you know, the way I look at that is, you know, I have a bar chart that I track of those things based on hours and those kind of things to kind of see what the glut looks like. And that hour range, whether it's tractors, combines, or whatever, it hasn't really moved any, and it's not getting bigger. It's not getting smaller. It's just there. And that has some concern, you know, because if you traditionally, a lot of that equipment would move south into Mexico and into South America and those areas. And kind of what I was talking about earlier, you know, they're actually looking to at 1 and 2 and 3 year old machines, more of that stuff's starting to go to Mexico now too. So there's just that buying group is not there that used to be. And unfortunately, it's not layered in there a little piece at a time like it would normally see through the traditional washout cycle. It all kind of came at one time, and that's one of the big systems that we have to figure out how to get through here in the next 2 or 3 years.
Right. Well, that's great stuff, Casey. Love your insights. And in our last 45 seconds or so here, Casey, tell folks out there about the Moving Iron Podcast, how you got started, and what you kind of what it means to you.
Yeah. You know, I started the podcast just as a way to get information, to share information. I learned as much from my podcast as I hope other people learn from it. I'm real big on sharing information and sharing tactics and sharing, kind of what I see happening in the marketplace, because there's a lot of people out there doing this every day, Greg, and there's a lot of people that know a lot more than I do about this stuff. But there's a good opportunity for me to learn something and get the conversation started.
Right. Well, Casey, you keep rocking, brother. You're doing an awesome job. And folks, again, I highly suggest you check out the Moving Iron Podcast. And Casey, thanks for joining us.
Greg, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Well, the Greg Peterson Machinery Pete remix extended style continues after these words on AgriTalk. Stick around. We're going to talk pick of the week, and we're going to look into the future. Future. Future.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Groundhog's revenge continues here in central Iowa. Still snowing on this Monday morning, but that's all right. Here on AgriTalk, we've got all we need. I've got my trusty news dog, Blaze. I've got a cup of rich organic tea, and we've got Machinery Pete Greg Peterson along with us this morning. Man, great guests so far, buddy. Good work.
I've made a lot of friends in the machinery biz over the years, Davis, and guys like Casey and Kevin have taught me a lot, and just fun to work with. So yeah, really fun to chat with them.
I'm a complete moron when it comes to the machinery markets. And I can't help but wonder if the used machinery market is super hot and a lot of demand for used machinery, does that have any implications for pricing for new machinery and implements at all? Can you speak to that, or am I just way out of line?
No, absolutely, Davis. What happens in the used market with used pricing is always connected at the hip to conditions for new equipment sales. Now, occasionally, like when I was talking with Casey there, once in a while you kind of get the stars line up and you get a situation where, you know, new sales of equipment take off like a rocket and used values take off. And that's what we're in right now. I think maybe for folks out there, there is a direct correlation to the car market right now, which I think manufacturers had to pull back, and used car values and truck values have exploded higher. So yeah, it's really interesting to follow.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got to get to your pick of the week this week. What do you got for us?
We're going to Ontario, folks, Saturday. Now, this model, this John Deere 7810, I've told this story many times, but if you go to machinerypete.com, when we track data, it's like one of the most searched tractor models of any is a John Deere 7810. So, of course, it's like 20-ish years old, a little more. But they had a 2001 model Saturday in McGregor, Ontario. My friends at Shackleton Auctions up there. This was a farm sale for Garden Farms. Now, this thing only had 1,747 hours on it. And, Davis, it sold for $172,000 Canadian, which if you do the conversion rate, it's $137,600 U.S. Now, I've been tracking auction prices on 7810s over 20 years. This is an all-time record high, and not by a little bit, almost $8,500. The previous high was $129,139 back in August of 14, also out of Ontario, by the way. But again, those are U.S. dollars, $137,600. So, folks, when this thing was bidding going on, Davis, I had people on Twitter saying, "Pete, are you watching this? Are you seeing this?" But the demand for a nice condition 20-year-old tractor like this just through the roof.
Well, and so when you talk about not only was it a record, but it bested the record by by quite a ways, something similar went on in Southwest Wisconsin, eh?
Yeah, same day, Saturday. Again, this is why I mentioned, you know, earlier that it's actually difficult to pick what I want to blog about on a daily basis because, you know, another example here, a 96 model Case IH 7210 front wheel assist, 3,338 hours on it. Now, that 7210 model, Davis, we don't see a ton of them. They only made it a few years there, but still, this thing on a farm auction in Southwest Wisconsin Saturday brought $67,000. And for perspective, the highest auction price I'd ever seen on a Case IH 7210 was $57,500. And that was over 4 years ago, back December of 16 in Sanborn, Iowa, with one that had quite a bit less hours. So pushing over 3,300 hours at $67,000, again, all-time record high. And just indicative of like Casey and I were yakking about there, the demand for good condition used is just extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's got to make your work very exciting and give you something to look forward to with every upcoming auction. It's got to be this sort of sense of anticipation. Man, I wonder what's going to be the zinger this week.
Yeah.
What are you looking at this week coming up?
Well, this week, we're right in the middle of go time here. Middle of March is always the busiest auction time of year. And we have a busy week, involved with our good friends at the Steffes Group, steffesgroup.com. I was looking there this week, Davis. And now these guys actually have 9 equipment auctions Tuesday through Friday. Of course, the online-only sales, they can double up there on some days, different areas. But, so check that out, folks, steffesgroup.com. They got 9 auctions coming up. And actually, 2 that I'd want to highlight. One is Wednesday, the Ken Rusted Farm Retirement auction in, I think, Rose Glen, North Dakota. Folks maybe saw the blog I wrote about this the other day. But they have 8 John Deere tractors on this farm auction, a pair of John Deere 9630s, really sharp, an 8230 with just over 3,500 hours. And then all kinds of equipment. They got a 2019 John Deere 1895 42.5-foot air drill. Looks pretty sharp. A 2019 John Deere R4038 sprayer. And this one, I know our buddy Chip would love. On that auction is a 1965 International D1200 pickup that looks like new. So something for everybody there. But then on Friday, Davis, folks, if you're looking to get out to an auction, come join us in Hector, Minnesota. This is a farm retirement auction for Donovan Vandervoort, again, by the Steffes Group. Donovan is retiring. But we'll be filming this auction for our Machine Repeat TV show. And we'll also have my friend Zach Johnson, the millennial farmer, of course, from Lowry, Minnesota, will be joining us. We'll be doing some filming with Zach, kind of a special upcoming episode for Machine Repeat TV on his rise to fame. And, of course, everyone knows and loves Zach. Millennial farmer. I looked, Davis, this morning. Zach has over 740,000 YouTube subscribers. So we want to, get the story on that from Zach. And we have a kind of a special surprise we'll be doing at the auction. But again, that sales Friday in Hector. Really nice equipment that Donovan has, Davis. Mm-hmm. He's got 2014 Case IH Steiger 470 quad track, 1,500 hours. Bunch of nice John Deere tractors. An 09 John Deere 9770. So we're going to have fun out there Friday in Hector.
Man, it sounds like a busy week for you. I'm glad we got you when you had some availability this morning, Machinery Pete.
Oh, it's been great fun. Thanks for having me on, Davis.
Hey, and I know a Minnesota boy probably has a little garden spot real quick with a little rhubarb in it, maybe. Is your, you got rhubarb going?
Oh,
is it up?
Rhubarb and zucchini, we put that in everything up here, Davis. So rhubarb, it hasn't sprouted yet, but I'm looking out my window right now. I can't wait.
Yeah. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, thanks again. We've had Kevin Wendt from the Wendt Group. Casey Seymour, host of the Moving Iron podcast and location manager for 21st Century Equipment. This has been a great edition of AgriTalk. Thanks for joining us. This afternoon, we've got Chicago's own Ted Seifert with Darren Newsom. And tomorrow morning, it's a Haney hullabaloo. Sean Haney with guest Alan Morgan from the Rural National Health Association. Come on back for more AgriTalk.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.